Hello, everyone. Thanks for staying to the last session of the day. Hope you're all doing well and have had a good conference so far. I'm Andy O'Donnell. I'm a technical product manager on the Office 365 team. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the small business SKU. And for today's session, it's really going to be focused a lot on just some of the scenarios that we've heard from small business customers. It's going to start off kind of with an overview for Office 365 and focus a lot on some of the end user experiences and thinking about how those can be best used in small business to solve common problems that they might have. It's not going to be a super technical session. If you're extremely Office 365 up to date, a lot of this will probably be repeat and new to you. It's definitely more, you know, giving you an idea of what the end user experience is like and how that can be best leveraged. So it's definitely, if you haven't seen some of the new things that we've done with Office 365, there'll probably be some new information. But if you've been with us through the whole journey since, you know, the 2010 release of Office 365, et cetera, it probably wouldn't be a lot of new content, just so you're aware of that. So for the agenda today, I want to talk a little bit about just some of the high-level challenges that we heard from small businesses when we were going out there and thinking about how do we create Office 365 and make it really useful for small businesses and simplify it. There was a lot of simplification that was done in the most recent set of updates that were released back in February as part of the new Office 365 update. And there was a lot of research that went into that. And really it was about focusing on the key scenarios for small businesses and making sure that we had easy ways for them to manage and control the service. And we also wanted to really differentiate that from the mid-size and enterprise versions of Office 365. That is really where a lot of the focus was initially, in particular, when you think about trying to help move a lot of our big on-prem customers who have Exchange servers, SharePoint farms, and helping them move to the cloud. So it's definitely aimed at a different user type, different company. And we'll talk a little bit about also, though, when is the right time for an Office 365 small business customer to consider using maybe the mid-size SKU or the enterprise SKUs if they have certain business needs. So we'll kind of talk a little bit about that, when to think about which ones, what some of those key differentiators are and the key benefits. And then hopefully I'll be able to spend the second half of the presentation mostly just kind of walking through some demos that look at sort of what's new with the Office client, how that integrates with Office 365, and how it can help with some of these common challenges that small businesses have. And lastly, I'll finish off focused. I'll dump into the admin periodically throughout some of those scenario examples, but at the end I'll then spend a little more time just covering off some other aspects of the admin overview. And I'll try and hopefully, I think, unless I get really bogged down with lots of questions, I should be able to take questions throughout and hopefully address those as they come up. And if you want to use the mic, great. Otherwise, I'll just repeat it so it's on the recording. So when we started doing our investigations into how could we make Office 365 better for small businesses, what changes did we need to make for the version that it was really designed for our already Exchange and SharePoint familiar customers? What did we need to do to really bring it to them? There were four key comments and areas that we got from some of our research, and basically it was really around, hey, we small businesses really want to make sure that they can get access to their documents anywhere. They don't want to have to think about setting up a lot of different proxy servers or gateways. They want to just make sure it's just going to work and that they have access to it from the devices that they're going to use. That's obviously a key tenet of Office 365 in general, so that one was really easy for them to take advantage of. Having professional email, this is just the idea that, one of the main reasons we saw small businesses adopting 365 was that they wanted to stop using sort of the generic either ISP, at their ISP or at Outlook.com. They wanted to switch to a more professional looking and have their company name in their domain. So that was one of the main reasons. And we've also been working to make that easier for companies to bring their domain into Office 365. And I'll talk a little bit about that. They wanted the high availability and uptime. So for small businesses, because a lot of them would obviously outsource, bring in a partner. Probably some of you in the room are partners helping small businesses with Office 365. It could be challenging for them when their server would go down. And so Office 365 means they no longer have to worry about that one server going down and having to do the long the long lead times to get that back up and not sure how to do that. And some, you know, for some small businesses, they have even, their partners are more, you know, regional. And so they have, maybe they might not be super easy for them to get over to that small business and service them. It might take them, you know, a day or a couple of days to get over there and actually help the customer. So this way they always have a higher backed resiliency while still being able to use the partner for their day-to-day things they can do over the phone or sharing desktop type solution fixes. And then lastly was, you know, they wanted something without a lot of upfront costs, something that could help them get going very quickly. And upfront costs, definitely having to buy the server and do the implementation costs, was, you know, a much higher overhead when you compare that to Office 365 and just being able to even do month to month, or if you buy it at a year at a time. And so that obviously lowers the investment a small business has to make to get going on the service and test that out. So this is, you know, those are really the key areas, the areas that we wanted to invest in making Office 365 simpler, and we'll kind of, you know, go through that as we go through some of the demonstrations. So when you think about Office 365, one of the key things that is new with the recent release is in Small Business Premium, customers are able to get the full rich client of Office, so Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, delivered from the cloud to their machine, and it's cached locally, so it's not running virtualized up in our server. It's not the same as the Office web apps. It's actually local on that machine running. It's very familiar, very traditional Office, but it's still being delivered and managed by the service. This also enables us to do authentication via the user, so that basically now we can enable things like multiple devices, and I'll talk more about that. But the important thing is that it's the familiar Office that small businesses know and use every day, now cloud connected. That's really the difference. They don't have to think as much about where they're using some new tools, or they don't have to go to the browser. They can save directly to SharePoint right from within Office easily. And so that integration was really, you know, kind of the next step if you compare it to where we were in the previous release of Office 365 Small Business. Obviously, you have the backends of Exchange, SharePoint, and Link. But we give a smaller subset of IT controls to the Small Business Premium, again, with that focus on very simple IT. But there are cases where maybe, you know, if you're a partner and you know the needs of your customer, it makes sense for them to have one of the more advanced SKUs, in which case you then have full access to the advanced administration consoles. We've done a lot of optimization for devices, and I'll just show you for the example when I do some of the demos of Outlook and what we've done there to help people use it across things like iOS devices or Android devices and tablets, as well as Windows Phone and Surface devices. And then really it's about, you know, common standards, so using HTML and JavaScript and CSS to really bring those experiences and have a very fluid UI. I already hit on the availability of Office 365. There's also other sessions here if you're really interested in our availability story that I recommend you check that out. The continuous innovation. So with Office 365, we're right in the midst right now, actually, of upgrading a lot of our customers, and we're always shipping monthly updates as well to the service. So a recent feature that went out this week, for example, was for DirSync. You can now do password sync, where you're syncing the passwords without having to have separate ones or set up ADFS. And so we're constantly updating the service, bringing new features out, and a good place to check some of those. I'm going to just switch over and show you so you know where that good resource to go. When you're thinking about understanding what's new with the service, you want to make sure that you can go to the community site. So if you haven't been to community.office365.com, this is a great location for all of the things support related with Office 365. But in particular, there's a service updates wiki. So if you go to the wiki section, go down to service Office 365 service updates, you can see what the actual features are that have shipped in the different each month for the service. So if we look at, for example, the professional small business version in English, we can see what some of the new features and functionality. For example, some of the ability to do upgrades. Some of the new namespaces, Yammer was added, the ability for them to integrate that and get that through their SKU. Also, the link clients for Android were updated back, so you can get an idea of when new features are being released. And we update this frequently with whatever's impacting those customers. And there's also the enterprise version that would have features that didn't apply to the small business SKU, but applied to the enterprise one as well. And then lastly, of course, Office 365 uses third-party certifications and verification. And really, there's some, obviously, the small businesses, you know, some of those apply or don't apply. One that I found has been really popular with small business customers is the HIPAA agreement, because you get a lot of small medical practices, and the fact that Office 365 meets those requirements has been really useful for them. I know that there's also, I think there's like some tax incentives, et cetera, if you can prove that you have HIPAA-compliant records and data storage for your patient data. So that's been a really popular one that a lot don't know about, and you can go on to the Trust Center, so the Office 365 Trust Center, and you can actually download the HIPAA agreement and the, I think there's a signed, it's called like a BAA agreement as well. So that's one that I found really, really popular with small business customers. So now when we think about, you know, we have all of these features and settings, but obviously there's multiple SKUs out there. So try to give a simple version. I'll show you the more complex version of this that we have online as well. But these are some of the, you know, key things to think about when you're walking a customer through what version of Office 365 they want to get. We still have the what we used to have before the service upgrade, where we didn't have Office. We still have the what's just called small business without the premium. And the main thing there is that you don't get the Office client. So if you have, you know, a small business customer who just wants, say, some of their users are really lightweight users, they just need to basically maybe fill in some Word documents occasionally, they need the email, but they don't need the full suite, you can mix and match a small business with some small business and some small business premium and get the right mix for your customer. And then, again, it's ideal for 1 to 10 seats, although it does go up to a maximum of 25 possible users. Then you have the mid-sized business SKU, and that really, the main differentiator there is you really start to get all the advanced administration controls, so you get full access to the Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, and Link Online admin dashboards that you'd see if you had an enterprise or on-prem server. So that's where you get the much richer controls management. You also get more options around deployment. And there is an important difference. The desktop versions are slightly different between Small Business Premium and the Midsize Enterprise. Midsize and Enterprise come with Office 365 Pro Plus, which enables some of the more advanced capabilities, such as, you know, IRM capabilities if you have that through the client. Also, the more advanced Excel functionality, so some of the BI settings in Excel, if you've seen the Power View or Power Pivot, that is only available in the higher-end Office 365 versions. Again, it just depends on the needs. The other one for small businesses that I've talked to, where it matters, one of the decision points, is a lot of smaller legal firms really prefer the enterprise SKU for some of the archiving and compliance options, the things like in-place hold and e-discovery. They like to have that for regulatory purposes. So that's been that's one example where I've seen that really matter. But that just gives you a high-level overview. And then if you want to see the deeper technical version, we have the Office 365 service descriptions. So you can just remember o365sd.com. And then these are the detailed technical versions. You can see here, if we go, for example, and take a look at the Exchange Online, the first page of all of these service descriptions is mostly just a giant table that compares the SKUs. So here you can see small business premium, midsize, and then the different enterprise SKUs, and then compares what features are in which of those SKUs. So, for example, if we go down here to some of our global address books. We've got capacity alerts, recovery, link presence, But you have a lot of like hybrid support, for example. Obviously, we don't support hybrid deployment in the small business or small business premium, but we do in the mid-size and above. So if you have a customer that does have an on-prem Exchange server and they want to have a hybrid configuration, that would be a reason why you'd want to choose. So this gives you much larger tables. It also has, if you keep scrolling down, it also has the individual plans. So if you're ever just trying to understand Exchange Online Plan 1, Plan 2, those are also here. Another thing to note is this changes frequently, so we don't recommend that you print it. We always recommend that you go to the page and look at the documentation, such as the storage limits, for example. But you can use TechNet to print multiple topics, and then you can actually go ahead and create all of those service subscriptions and bundle them all together and print them out. Last time I checked, it was over 200 pages of complete documentation among all those tables. So that's just a good resource, particularly if you're a partner trying to compare which ones are right for your customers and want to get into the individual feature level. So before I move on, any questions about kind of this, the arrangement, the SKUs, et cetera? Otherwise, I'll start talking about some more of the features, options. Yep. So the question is, does a customer have to be a certain number of seats in order to use the other SKUs? No. You can purchase the enterprise SKUs, such as E3 or E1, for just one user. So you can purchase them for any small number. That's just more the recommendation or the sort of the target that we're saying it's ideal for. But there's no minimum, so any of the SKUs can be purchased. It's the hard limits are on small business premium, midsize. Midsize can only go up to 300 absolute maximum number of users, and then small business and small business premium can only go to a maximum of 25 users. So if you know that they're going to be growing, et cetera, those are definitely considerations because right now you can't move easily between the different versions. You have to make sure you start with the right one. We're working on enabling the ability to move up, but right now you can't do that. So it's best to choose the one that best fits the organization and test them out beforehand. Yes? Yes, they just published that on Monday. That was announced here as one of the Windows Azure Active Directory team released that Monday. But DirSync, just to point this out, DirSync would not be something you would use with the small business or small business premium. It would only be available in the midsize and above because it's connecting to your existing Active Directory. All right, so For the devices, which is a key point with Office 365, small business, is the ability now to install Office on up to 5 devices. So because we're using the user activation instead of device, or what used to be the product key cards, you're now able to install it on multiple machines. And that same user license is good for both the Mac and PC version. So if you have a user with both devices or they have a home computer, they're able to go log into their account and download and use Office on that machine. And then I already mentioned some of the optimizations we've done, but there also are certain client apps such as OneNote and Link that are actual clients that you can download for the other iOS and Android devices. There's also the Office Hub on Windows Phone if you haven't seen that. And I'll show you what the Outlook optimized experience is like in a little bit. So one of the scenarios that talked with some small businesses and was kind of an interesting one was really around their scheduling. So think of maybe a small medical practice or any sort of firm that's doing a lot of customer meetings, and they have kind of a centrally managed scheduling where they have, say, the admin taking the customer calls in. They have they're really focused on that person sort of managing the schedule, and then the person who's actually meeting with the customer or the patient, et cetera, is not really trying to control the schedule. They just want the output. And so as people are calling in and changing throughout the day, they want a really fast way to manage that. And you might even have more complex offices where you might have, say, five people who are meeting with the different patients, and they need a way to quickly manage all of that. So that was kind of one of the common situations we saw. One I've heard from customers that they've been using Office 365 as a way to, you know, use some of the categories, the color coding, et cetera, to map that out for the individual, doctor or the individual consultant, and then they're able to move their patients around or the meetings around as needed from the central admin desk. And so the ability to do some of the advanced calendar sharing and shared mailboxes made this a lot easier for customers. And so I'll just kind of show you what that looks like. So let's switch over here to our machine. Okay, so closing out of this. Here we've got Outlook. So this is the new Outlook experience. If you haven't seen what the Office 365 Pro Plus looks like, and you can see here, for example, we've got some of the touch things. Also, are, you can activate those as well with touch mode. So, for example, if you want to see what that looks like, you can. It makes basically the ribbon and the objects around all the spacing larger, so that people can touch it on their different devices. So that's one of the optimizations we made there. And you can see some of the other changes, that, such as the just-in-time information, like the delete button or the ability to flag, as well as some of the what we call peaks, which give you peaks into the different aspects like calendar and people and tasks, so that those appear just quickly there, and you can move around and navigate those without having to switch what you're doing. So if we go into, if we take a look here at Katie's inbox, this is around the scheduling task. We can see here, I'm going to first show you the end output. So if we look at the output, what we've done is the office has created a patient appointment calendar. And so this calendar is shared with all of the different medical practitioners, say, in this organization. And basically, the appointments get made and managed, and then they're color-coded based on who is the actual consultant or doctor that's supposed to be meeting with the person for that appointment. So, for example, Katie knows that the orange ones apply to her, one of her colleagues, Robin works with the green ones, for example. And then the nice thing is that this overlays onto Katie's other calendar, so she can make sure she doesn't have any other conflicts that maybe aren't related to the ones that are being scheduled by the admin, right, by the central administration desk. So you can see how that works there. Then if we go and take a look at the same calendar, if we go to our OWA, this is the Outlook web app in the browser now. So I've switched from the rich client to the browser, and you can see how the UI has retained a lot of similarities there. So users moving between this really lowers the level of training that's required for small businesses. This is also another area that's really important, is when we get new versions, they want to have something that's easy for them to quickly adopt. And I can show you, if we go to the calendar view, there's that same patient appointments calendar. And then that'll load up a view here. So let's go to the week view, and we can see those same ones being overlaid. We could close that if we didn't want to see the overlay, but again, same exact view here. And we could edit those if we needed to. And then one other I mentioned a couple of times, I just want to jump and show you what it looks like on mobile devices as well. So here's that same inbox. But we're going to go ahead and just pretend, we're going to make the browser think that we're using a tablet device. So if you had, say, a Surface, I don't know if any of you waited in that long, long line. Every time I saw that line, it looked like it was a couple hours long. You could use this view to manage your OWA. And you can see how we put the touch buttons down at the bottom. Again, made it a little, easy for your thumbs to hit the reply in line, and switch between the different email messages, all with touch. And you can see, for example, then you can move between calendar, people, and options also from this setting. So that's what it looks like for the tablet view. You can minimize your folders and just have the full access to just the content. And if you start replying right in line, it just updates using the JavaScript HTML. Here, so we can just go ahead, and then if we navigate away from that, we can save it, and it will keep the draft and notify us that we have a draft even as we switch between our other versions, just like you would expect it to with the Exchange backend. So if we take a look at what looks like on a mobile device. I'm going to just minimize everything really quickly and go back to the experience there. This is what you get on a phone. So this is on any modern browser on a phone. You can get this view, which again has been optimized with the touch buttons at the bottom, so you can see and navigate your email really easily, as well as your calendar. You can see if we, for example, the calendar, they've sort of changed the view to be more of a day view instead of a week view, which is useful, obviously, and on a smaller screen. So again, just useful. You can see that draft that we started inside of the tablet version of the Outlook web app. That same draft, obviously, carrying over. So now let's talk a little bit about what it was to, when we think about that sharing calendar and you setting up the appointments, how did we consider setting that up? The main way is you could just share a calendar from some one individual, but then they wouldn't have the ability to easily edit the calendar or allow multiple people to go in and make updates to the calendar. So if you had different admins or different people working the front desk every day, it would be difficult, or it'd have to be a shared account. So really what you want to do is enable shared mailboxes for this. So I'll show you just what that looks like in the admin portal. So if I go to our administration here, and I'm going to go ahead and open up the admin dashboard. This is the admin dashboard for the small business SKUs. And you can see here, if I go to users and groups, this is where I'm able to create shared mailboxes. So this is where you can create a shared mailbox that also includes a shared calendar. So this is where you can do things like create a new one, lets you give it a name and an email address. Again, very useful for a small business, also when it comes to looking professional, as I mentioned earlier, because they could set up multiple email addresses or shared mailboxes for things like customer questions or business inquiries. And the nice thing about that as well is if, say, even a really small business, if they had one or two people and they didn't want necessarily every customer inquiry to get from Bob at Fourth Coffee Co. or at that at the owner's address, you can get the reply from to also be the shared mailbox address, just like you'd expect there. So again, very much meets the needs of small business customers. So you can quickly add that, and once you have one added, you can then also choose who you want to be a part and be able to manage that. So you can edit who has rights and who are the members to it, essentially, and add as many people as you want to the members list. And those will be the ones that are able to edit it. And you can see how this is a much more simple version. Now I'll show you, for those of you who aren't familiar with Exchange Online, I'll just show you what that looks like in the Exchange Online Admin Center. So if you were using the mid-size business SKU or the enterprise business SKU, this is the Exchange Admin Center. Much more complex, a lot more options here. For partners that are managing on behalf of this, this can still a very viable option. So if you go to the shared tab under recipients, this is where you can see that appointments calendar that we had shared out earlier. You can obviously add new ones, edit these, etc. And this is where you can do the delegation of who actually has the rights to have full access versus just send as, and allow people to edit it this way. And you have a lot of other customizations and options that you can do, such as all of the how it will appear in the GAL, etc. Policies that to apply to it, etc. So we'll go ahead and close out of that. All right, going back over. So we went ahead and we demoed the shared scheduling. So now another scenario is the multiple office locations. So sometimes small businesses, they're really struggling with, they're just maybe just expanding to a second location, or they have a couple of projects or project sites. Maybe they're contracting out different construction at a couple locations, and they're trying to manage their office branches without having to make everyone come in centrally. And when I talked with small business owners around this, their main challenges were mostly, how do I know what's going on with my team that's at cities X or City Y or on site with the customer? How can Office 365 help me manage that? It's great that I have email, but I need a way to get a better view into what is going on with people at these different locations. So And really, in the amount of time, and their other frustration was really the amount of time that they were spending trying to collect that information and data. And really, with Office 365 and the new SharePoint online settings, there's now ways to better manage project tasks centrally on the different project sites, and you can even use the project to divvy out those tasks to different users, et cetera. So I'll show you that. And then the other piece that really helps small business users is the Link Online capabilities. Link Online is very powerful in terms of being able to collaborate easily, set up meetings, share desktops, all of those things that probably most of you take for granted. That is extremely important for small business users that have never had that capability, or they're sort of cobbling it together with a mixture of free services, but they don't have one that integrates with how they're actually trying to work with their documents and how they're and the actual ability to communicate between these different branches or offices. So if we go back to our SharePoint site, let's go and minimize these windows here. Let's open up, go to our sign-in page. And we'll sign in as Katie again. And we'll go over to our sites. So we can have several different sites inside of our SharePoint Online environment. And you can follow the ones that you use most frequently and have different projects, et cetera. The following is really useful because it's customized to each individual user, so it makes it very easy for an individual to just go up here, click the follow button up at this tab, and they're able to get the sites that are most important to them. Or you can also follow documents. So if you just want to follow, hey, when has someone, so-and-so updated this document, it'll give you a nice notification stream. So the following options is really useful. And here we've got a project site. It might look a little different than if you've seen just the plain vanilla white SharePoint, but that was done just using one of our built-in templates. So there's some of the new templates, such as what is your style, that allow you to change the way a site looks. And then we have basic all of these templates that make it really easy for small businesses to customize the site without having to know any HTML or having to go into SharePoint Designer to actually configure the look and feel of the different sites that they have. And these same templates can also be applied to their public website that comes with Office 365 as well. So if we go back to the home page, we'll just take a look at this task. So this is one that we've populated with some different ideas, but basically this is the timeline view. Originally it came from Project. If you're familiar with Project or Project Online, this is the view. Essentially, this is a SharePoint list of tasks, and we can go ahead and edit that list, but it gives people a way to centralize what's going on at those different offices or what's going on with that specific project that people are working on. And the nice thing about being able to this, with this list is that you can also assign people to the different tasks. And so this way, these tasks, when they get assigned, they'll actually show up for that person in their personal task list. So it can show up inside of Outlook, inside of OWA, so they know what they're working on and who else is responsible for different areas. So you have both the centralized view that really, when you think about the small business owner, that's really designed for them, and you have the individual view for the employees themselves. And you can see, I'll just show you quickly, and we'll come back, what that looks like. So for Katie, if she goes to her task, she can see all the tasks that are across the different sites. So this was the project that I was looking at, the strategic planning site. But you can see also she has some tasks related to a handbook that they're working on, as well as these tasks are the personal ones that she's created inside of Outlook or OWA. So if we go back over to our site, we can go ahead and manage these tasks and projects here. For example, we can obviously cross them off. We can remove them. We can add and remove them from the timeline view that's up above. If we go into the more detailed settings, we can also do things like create the start dates and end dates. So we can customize that. Again, if we want to provide extreme details and to say the percentage of how it's being completed, that's all possible here. But basically, again, gives a way to centralize what people are working on very easily so they can be seen across the different branches or offices of that small business. Also here, you can do things like add the another type of inbox. So we had the shared mailbox I talked about earlier, but there's a new type of mailbox in the new Office 365 called a site mailbox, and that creates a mailbox that's unique to that SharePoint site. So basically, for this project, it would have its own mailbox that mail would be persistent in and isn't attached to any one individual. So as people come in or leave that team site, they would have mail available that they're sharing across the team. And they can also drag conversations in. So that's really useful if you have, say, a couple different people interacting with a client. They can then bring together all those disparate conversations and make sure that everyone's aware of what the customer has been asking the various individuals. So it can be very centralized from that standpoint. If we go ahead, let's open up. Let's see here. We'll open up Excel document. That we're going to use for a meeting. So the second aspect of really staying in touch with these different office locations I mentioned was link. So we have this Excel document that we need to work on one of our colleagues with at a different office. So you can see here there's some historical data, but we're trying to figure out a better way to slice this data. So we're gonna go and see if we can set up a meeting with one of our colleagues. Earlier, we had set up this sync on proposal meeting. So with Katie set it up with Robin. So Katie can just click the join meeting and the meeting invite, or also there's a meeting prompt inside of the Outlook appointment reminders window. And you can see here Robin's already joined the call. One of the nice things is how easy it is to move from an IM message to a call. So you can see too, if you click on a person, you can start IMing them, you can call or do a video chat. So it's also, if whether you're doing a scheduled meeting like I just demonstrated from Outlook, or people want to do ad hoc meetings, which is often the case with small businesses, it's very easy to do that from link. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Those accounts also list under mail when they click on the mail option at the bottom.
Yes, I'll show you. Let me just show you what that looks like. So the question was, if you have calendars in SharePoint and those show up in Outlook, how do we show the new site mailboxes inside of Outlook? So the way that those appear is they appear as actual projects inside the mailbox. So if we go back to mail here, you see below, this is Katie's inbox, but if I minimize that, you can see some of the site mailboxes that she's been invited to. So for example, this Northwind Traders mailbox here, this is one that she's been invited to. There's the patient appointment site, this other Project Falcon one, and these are actual team sites. Now there's not any mail in this one in the inbox here, or there's one email message, but this is shared. So everyone that would have access to this mailbox, it shows up in their Outlook, they would also see the exact same email in this inbox, and they can also drag and drop mail to and from it. So if I go to inbox, I could take this Yammer one and just drag that in here. And now everyone else that's on this site will see this Yammer. The other nice thing about this integration, when you think about training new employees on SharePoint Online, if they're familiar with Outlook and they kind of understand, you know, using Outlook here, and they're used to sending email attachments, we've enabled the document library to show up in Outlook as well. So it's not actually a separate, it's not storing these in Outlook in any way. It's purely just showing what you saw inside of the browser in SharePoint Online inside of Outlook. So this is really handy for getting people out to stop using email attachments and start using the actual storage inside SharePoint Online, which is one of the challenges when you're trying to get new users moving over. And this also supports just drag and drop, and of course you can just open documents right from here. So if they double click, it actually then connects up to SharePoint Online and downloads the most recent copy of that document, which I'm not going to start editing this one. But that's another useful feature of the site mailbox integration between the two clients. No, the question was, where is the email being stored when you have a site mailbox? All mailboxes are in Exchange, and so the mail is being stored in Exchange. It's just that it's surfaced through the SharePoint site. But it's correct. All journeying rules still apply. Yes. So the question was, what is the licensing for site mailboxes? Site mailboxes, there is no additional cost or license. They're just a mailbox assigned to that project site. So you could have as many mailboxes as you have team sites inside of SharePoint.
Same goes for other kinds of resources, you know?
Yeah, there are limits to the amount of storage. So if you want to see like the amount of storage they have, that's in the service description document that I showed you, Office 365 service descriptions. You can see what the limit is. I don't want to say the wrong number, but they have the number there of what it is. I think it's 5 gigabytes, but I could be wrong. So it's up there online of what the size is for site mailboxes.
So like 10 conference rooms or whatever won't incur any additional cost.
Correct. You could, yes, you can have as many team sites as you have, you could have a mailbox for each of those team sites. Yes. So the Northwind Traders is the shared mailbox. So I'll show you. So I'm looking at it in Outlook right now. Let me show you what that looks like inside of SharePoint. So if I go back to here, let me just log back in. So if I go to Sites, and I go to the Northwind Trader site. So that was the same one we were just looking at inside of our Outlook mailbox. Under Recent, you see we've got Mailbox here. And so now if I click on that, it's going to open up the mailbox that's associated that we saw inside of Outlook. And you can see there's that Yammer email message that I drag and dropped in from the rich client. So, but this is viewing it. It's being rendered using the Outlook web app. It's stored in Exchange, but again, it was connected through SharePoint. So it's just integrating the two experiences together. And if I go back to the Northwind Traders site, you can see here the documents folder. These are the same documents that you see inside of here, right? These are the exact same two lists that are being showed. It's just about how it's being surfaced to the user so that they can more easily work the way they want to work. If they like working in Outlook, then they can basically, you know, do all their document manipulation here, or they can do it inside the browser if they're more comfortable with that experience. Is what sitting in Exchange or in SharePoint? The documents are sitting inside of SharePoint. Document storage is always inside of SharePoint Online, and mailbox storage is always inside of Exchange. And then the other thing I was going to show you quickly is with that, so jumping way back to where we were talking about the multiple offices, and you have the ad hoc meetings, for example, with Link. What's nice is the being able to integrate with Link. People can get access to it from just about anywhere. So we've got the mobile clients on Android, iOS, Surface, or Windows RT devices, and also, we have the Link web app, which a lot of people aren't familiar with. They got a nice overhaul with this recent release. So this is actually, I'm inside of Firefox. It's cross-browser, cross-platform web app. So you can see here, we're running that web app inside of the browser in Firefox. You have all the same options. It can even do things like start video. You can see, again, this is a very nice web app because it's actually just using the camera I have here to give you that preview. You can do things, you can present, you can share desktop, OneNote, you can do things, all the poll, whiteboard. So pretty much it's basically full-featured. It doesn't have everything that you have in the desktop-rich client, but it has a lot of the functionality just inside of the web app for Link. So it's really come a long way. I think it's a very handy way, particularly if you're, you know, a small business and you're setting up meetings with people outside of your organization and they can join as guests, obviously. So even if they don't have Link accounts, they can still join a meeting that you want to have, and they'll have this nice experience with rich audio and video and screen document sharing. So if, for example, in this scenario here, if we were going to if we were going to, actually I don't want to do the poll, if we were going to do the work on our Excel document together, I could do something like I could share the desktop. So I'm going to go ahead and share my desktop. So now Robin's going to be able to see the desktop. We'll create this, this will create a nice little infinity thing going on here in just a second. We'll see there. There's the desktop. You can see the fun. Yes, I like doing that. See how many it can go before you crash your computer. But basically, I wanted to share this document that we were working on. We were talking about some of the Excel features and things we needed to do to make this document better, make this proposal complete. One of the fun new slicers, if you're familiar with slicers in Excel, is the timeline slicer. So you can take some data like this that's graphed over a certain period of time, and we're going to go ahead and open this inside of Excel. So I'm going to open up Excel, and I want to edit this workbook, so I'm going to edit it in Excel, and we'll open that. So there we go, we've got it. I want to edit the version on the server, and go to my historical, my data that was over time period, and we can actually select all of this information here, and we can insert a slicer. So I'm going to go to insert and do my timeline slicer, based on date, obviously. And then if I bring that up, what's really useful is that then it's attached to actually what else we have going on inside of this chart here. So if we want to just view a certain period of time, the chart will automatically update. So if we just want to see the data from these couple of months, you can see here we get a nice updated view and the chart automatically updates. So it's a very useful slicer for manipulating data over time. A lot of people aren't familiar with some of the new slicers that we've done, so this is a very useful one. Another useful addition for small businesses too in Excel are some of the some of the new features for helping you clean up data. So inside of a lot of data that customers get, you often end up with things that are messy like this, where you've actually got a couple different types of information that you really would want in separate fields if it was in a true more database or tabular format. Maybe you're cleaning up, for example, one common scenario I heard was customers were trying to clean up thousands of customers that had given them their addresses, right? And they needed to separate out the address from the state, from the zip code. And they were doing that manually going through Excel and retyping out each of these. But really, with the the new ability to just start typing a certain area. So for example, here I want the rep. So I can start typing the name John, and then I can start typing Jenny. And basically, the quick fill sees the pattern that I'm trying to get from the data set, and actually then can fill in the names from all of the other data sets there. So then, if I category, for example, here I want events, here I want advertising, boom, and then it found all of the other, again, categories of the same similar type of data. So this makes it much easier for customers to quickly clean up data that they might have. So very useful if they don't have perfect databases like some larger customers. And then if the customer wants to do some quick analysis on that, we've created, we wanted to make it easier for customers to do things like create pivot charts, even if they don't know what a pivot chart or pivot table is exactly. So you can see here we've got this new quick analysis lens, and this lets you preview in real time what it's going to do with your data. And so you can create charts, for example, and shows you what those will look like. Or again, like I mentioned, the pivot tables. So if we wanted to do a pivot table just on, for example, here, we can just see, what was the spend for the category totals, where before we had it broken out by rep and et cetera. So we can actually, again, makes it easier for people to quickly analyze the data that they have. So those are just some fun new tips and tricks inside of Excel. So we just manipulated all that data in a shared meeting between those two branch offices, and we can see if that's still, you can see there we go with sharing still with Robin. So I'm going to go ahead and stop presenting through the link, and I'm going to go ahead and exit out of the meeting from the Link web app. We can sign out, but actually I'm not going to sign out of that, so we're going to go ahead and let that go. So that was some of the examples there. We'll jump back over the presentation. So one of the last scenarios I wanted to talk a little bit about was around outsourcing or contract work. So again, small businesses often have to share external to their organization. Link obviously can help with that, but you know, when I was talking with some of these customers, one was telling me they actually would make their vendors, they would email the documents, but then they didn't want the, or not email the documents, they were getting dictation written up, so they would physically mail these tapes that have all of the notes from the doctors and et cetera on the tapes to the people that then would type that up, and then they would send, because it had patient data, they weren't confident that you can't send it over, they weren't confident that they could send it over their public email addresses, so they would send the USB drives and mail those back physically or go and collect them. So you can imagine the time between getting the tape and getting the final product back from translated was, you know, well over 2 weeks. And so when you combine things like the HIPAA compliance, and then also just the fact that you can now do really nice external sharing, which I'll show you, really streamline some of those needs for small businesses who want to be able to share externally. And obviously, the other nice thing you were asking, you know, earlier about if we, you know, the site mailbox is using up licenses, external sharing allows people to collaborate with you, but it's not using up any of your small businesses' licenses, right, that you have. So again, a lot of challenges in this area today, but you know, there's some good options with SharePoint. So we're going to jump back over to our demo tenant here, and talk a little bit about some of the sharing capabilities. So inside of the document libraries, you can see here are some documents. I'll show another view too, just from difference. Sorry. Here you can see the SkyDrive. This is Katie's SkyDrive, for example. This is SkyDrive. This is actually, it says SkyDrive. It's actually SkyDrive Pro. So if you do get this customer from questions, what is the difference between SkyDrive and SkyDrive Pro? The main difference really is SkyDrive is the consumer version that is part of your Microsoft account. SkyDrive Pro is only part of Office 365. The back end is completely different technology. One is SharePoint, and the other is the custom SkyDrive back end. So they are different, and they obviously have different endpoints as well. So you can see here, inside of Office 365, we made sharing much easier. Before the recent update, it could sometimes be tricky to know who had permissions and didn't have permissions. But now you have this sharing view, and you can easily see, for example, who you've shared documents with and what their rights are. So here you can see this has been shared with a lot of people, but they're all just viewers of that. You can invite additional people by clicking the invite button and starting to add people's names, like Sarah, who we were just meeting with, and we can change privileges to, say, the editing, and also the require sign-in button, or we can share anonymously, too, which I'll talk a little bit more about, but there's a lot of options for how you want to share with inside of your organization. So this is sharing just with inside of the SkyDrive, so it's sort of your individual storage. Everyone gets 7 gigabytes for their individual, but then there's also the sharing within the sites themselves. So if we go back to that strategic planning site that we've been looking at for the projects that were being used inside the organization, you can see here we can share out these documents as well to different individuals. And basically, this gives you the ability to share the site or share just individual documents. So if you share, for example, just at the document level, it wouldn't give them access to other documents in that site. If you want to share the whole site, you have to use the top up here and share the actual site. And then this gives, again, you can control what level of access people have, how they're a member of that SharePoint site, and if they receive an email invitation or not. So that's sort of the overview, particularly for internal sharing. You can also do sharing externally, which is the main focus for small businesses and what they're trying to accomplish. So if we think about, you know, what that experience is like. We'll pretend Katie has an alter ego. So there we've got an account, and we'll share it with her. So we'll go ahead and send that, make her ability to contribute. It notifies us that it's been shared. And if we go over to another browser here, I will sign in. So here is, this is outlook.com, so this is a consumer service. This was the address that we sent that to. You can see sort of that experience that when someone shared the document with you, you can either share at the document level or you can share at the site level. And then it invites the person to go ahead and view that site. When they do so, and it'll prompt them to log in, although this one I think will already be logged in. But you can see here it's Katie Jordan is logged in on this site for as an external user. So they're not internal. You can see here, if I look at who this person is, again, it shows that it's their Outlook address. So it's using the Microsoft account to do the authentication, and it's using the Microsoft account to do all of the logging. So on the SharePoint side, you know, as people make changes to documents and all of that gets recorded and you have versions, et cetera, it would show up as this individual who's an external user for the organization. So a couple of questions around external using. You first, and then you. Go ahead.
So what if the external user does not have the Microsoft account?
They will be prompted to create a Microsoft account. They have to have one if you use the... If you leave the checkbox that I showed that said require sign-in, then they'll have to create a Microsoft account in order to do any editing. If you disable that, then they'll have anonymous access. They'll create a guest link that's anonymous. But a lot of capabilities like editing are disabled. It's more just for viewing. So second question? That was the answer to your questions? Okay. So then if we go ahead and take a look, so again, Katie is logged into this. And if we go ahead and we want to say edit this inside of the web apps, we'll edit in browser. So this is again the Outlook version. It's editing it. Go ahead and close out of the Outlook tab. And so you can see here, this is what it looks like inside of the web app. But then we could also have someone editing it inside of the rich client. So if we open up Word, we can also have her edit this in the rich client, so you can be editing between basically the web apps and the rich client simultaneously, which is obviously pretty useful for organizations as they're collaborating on documents together or working on something at the same time. So if we go here to Katie, I don't want to use the same. I want to make sure I'm using the different one here. So we'll sign out and sign in. Yes. So if we open up, let's see, if we open up this Word one and go ahead and click edit in Word. There you can see now we've got two people editing this document. So they're both the same, but one of them is the Hotmail and one of them is the Outlook.com address, and one of them is the actual Office 365 person editing the document. So again, you can have multiple people working on it across browser, both in the rich client. You could also have, with the recent web apps update, they also work on iOS devices. So you could have someone editing this document inside of the web app on an iOS device. So it gives you a lot of capabilities for people being able to collaborate externally wherever they are. And then show you some of the admin sides of how you can control sharing inside your organization. So for a small business, they definitely have fewer options. So if we go to our administration center here, and we'll go to our service settings. For sharing, there's very straightforward limited options. So basically, it's either on or off the external sharing with your small business version. So it's either you can either do it or you can't, and there's no granularity to that. Again, just designed to be very simple, keep it easy. But for the more advanced capabilities, we can go to the SharePoint administration console, and you can see some of the options that are available there. So for the whole tenant, they have the ability to change, don't allow sharing outside my organization, allow it only if they require sign-in so that you can't send or create anonymous guest links, or you can use it to, as I have it here for the demo, obviously, where we want to be able to do both anonymous guest links and be able to have the require sign-in. You can also manage it at a site collection level as well. So you can go to your site collections and modify under the, if you select your different options and select sharing, you can just change it for that one site collection. So this can be very useful if you have, say, all of your financial data inside of one site collection. You can just say, nope, this one, you can't share any of this information outside of the organization, but then everything, all of the other documents that you're okay with, and so you allow it. So if you need that more granularity, again, that's a capability you get with the more advanced admin consoles. So the question was, how is storage quota managed? For the small business service, it's just 10 gigabytes, and you can buy additional. Basically, with the Office 365, the M and E SKUs, it's basically 10 gigs plus, I think, 500 megabytes per user, and then you can allocate that to different sites, site collections as you see fit. Yes, question? No, so in the small business SKU, the question is, what about site collections in the small business SKU? In the small business SKU, we're, again, aiming for simplicity, and so really all it is a single site collection. And we're obfuscating the ability to have multiple site collections away. So yes, I'm showing you what it looks like if you have the M or E plan for that view. Again, for the small business view, it's just this. It's just the unified service settings, and it's either on or off for all SharePoint sites. And another useful feature inside of, just to do another kind of tips and tricks with when working with the new Office, another really useful feature for small businesses is that Word now has the ability to do editing with PDFs. So if we take a look at, for example, this PDF here, I'm going to open it with Adobe Reader first. Just to show you some of the neat things this enables. But basically, if we have, for example, this this table, and we copy and paste it into Word, we lose all of the formatting from a traditional PDF. But now what we enable you to do is to actually open that inside natively. So you can just you can also go to the backstage and open it, or you can just right-click and click Open in Word. It's going to say yes if you want us to convert it. And see, it can do a good job with rendering the tables and those aspects and the charts. And we can actually copy and paste. We can copy and paste that data between the documents, so you can see how that appears a lot more. It renders a lot better and keeps the actual formatting from the original PDF. So this was the original PDF here. You can make changes to it. You know, delete this table. Whatever you want to do, and then when you go to save it, you can still save it as a PDF again back to. So if we want to save it, we can save it to our environment, and we can save it as a Word document, or we can convert it back to a PDF. So basically, it can help the small business with their workflow without having to use additional software to manipulate a very common form of document now. Yes, question. No, it's pretty limited in terms of some of the more advanced PDF capabilities. So if the form document is like locked down, it won't be able to do any editing. It could edit the form, but it wouldn't recreate it back into the PDF form format where then someone else could fill it in. So that's the PDF reflow, which is a useful feature. So I think with that, we're done with the outsourcing contract work. So we'll go back over here to the deck, talked about external sharing. Also include some slides with a few more details around external sharing, what some of the options are there for viewing and editing around those, and what the experience is that I sort of went over quickly around being able to control it between the small business and the E and M SKUs. and also with the defaults there as well. So last, wanted to come back to Office 365 Pro Plus or Small Business Premium. There are some differences between the version that's in the mid-size and the enterprise SKUs versus the Small Business Premium. But wanted to, again, highlight 5 installs across the devices. You get the roaming settings. So the roaming settings is really inside of your documents. When people open up, say, a new thing here on the right left hand side, you get to see all the documents that you've been working with recently, and this moves with you across your different devices. So if you as you edit, say, different ones at home in the web apps or on your secondary device, your laptop versus your desktop, this will update and move with you. Some other things that currently can move are your custom dictionaries and some of basic settings move with you as well. So this can be very, very useful. You can also disable this if you don't want to have that roam with you. So that's one of the roaming capabilities. The upgrades are included. So as new versions of the clients come out, those updates will just be included inside of it. You won't, it's versus today where if you had 2010 and now you buy 2013, you're buying a new upgrade. Basically, if you have Office 365, we're just going to continuously be updating the client, and so as those updates come out, you'll just get them. There's no additional cost to incur, or you don't have to reinstall a new version because it just comes down to the client. It's using the click-to-run technology, so if you've heard of AppV, it's using that virtualization technology to stream down Office and install it very quickly, and that's also what enables Office on Demand. So Office on Demand is designed to cover a slightly different scenario. Let's say you're on vacation and you're on a computer, you're on a Windows 7 computer or above, and it doesn't have a rich client Office. So what you can do is you can actually stream down Office. If you go to the Use Office on Demand, it will stream down just that one application into the temporary internet folder of that computer. And it will load the features, basically, and as soon as you log off that computer, it will flush that copy from the machine. So it just goes down quickly, and I can just show you what that looks like. So there it's streaming Office. So even though I have Office installed, what it's actually doing is it's streaming it down into the temporary internet cache, and then it would allow me to open up, again, all of my same documents, for example. But it's, again, it's a separate version of Word, actually, on that computer. So I don't want to keep having it stream that down. But that, again, enables some interesting scenarios if you need to work remotely, but you need the power of the full rich client.
So you're accessing that from the SharePoint Pro website?
The Office on Demand you access through the SharePoint, correct. Yep. I'll show you, it brings up a good point. If you are just trying to get the version that you install permanently, which is what most of the time you want, it's important to know where users go to get that. So when people log in for the very first time, I don't have that screen. I can show you if I go to the settings. If you go to Office 365 settings and you go to get started, this is the experience that a user will get the first time they log into Office 365. And from the PC area, this is where when they click on this, it prompts them to install on their machine so they can do a quick and easy self-install of the new Office. And this will install it, cache it locally, so even though it's the virtual technology, it'll stay on the machine, they can go offline, they can work, and it's going to have all of the rich client capabilities. And then if for some reason they're not going to get started anymore, they've already been using it for a while, and they just want to install it on maybe their third or fourth device, they just go to the settings and they go to software. So Office 365 settings, software. And then this is where they can also, the other nice thing about this is where you can see your machines that you're using it on. So if you ever need to, you've reached your fifth device or your sixth device, actually, and you want to go and say, I'm no longer using that machine that I installed it on, that's where you can deactivate it and then get an install back. So you can install it on more devices as well. Also, we have links to the Windows RT, OneNote, and Link apps as well from here. So that helps users get their tools. Here, and then also some of the other add-ins like SharePoint Designer, the desktop setup. This is if you already have, say, Office 2010 or Office 2007, you would go and use this tool to connect it to Office 365.
Does that force an uninstall on the deactivated device?
It doesn't force an uninstall. What it does is it deletes the credentials that are saved on that device. And so once Office 365 Pro Plus can no longer, once it can no longer activate, it basically goes into reduced functionality mode. And so, and what will happen, it's pretty much, that would also happen if for over 60 days, if Office 365 Pro Plus doesn't have an internet connection, if it can't hit our server, it'll also go into that mode. So it doesn't uninstall, but it basically makes it unusable, essentially. It can basically just view documents. So that covers off. Any other questions around Office 365 Pro Plus or Small Business Premium? So just we want to make sure people don't confuse it with the web apps. We got a lot of our user testing to show that, you know, that was very, people thought it wasn't really Office or it wasn't really on their computer or that it was just running in a server somewhere and it wouldn't work if they didn't have internet. And that is not the case. It is full Office, just like the 2013 version. It's just being streamed down and managed by us for the first time, but cached locally from then on out. So quickly, I'll just highlight a couple other areas in the admin console. So if we go back to our small business, for the small business admin, this is where basically you have service settings. So I already covered the sharing, but you have also the ability to share calendars. This is where you can disable Exchange Active Sync if there was some reason you wanted to do that, or disable the ability to use Link Mobile clients. This is passwords, where you can manage how long before passwords expire. To show you, like, this is obviously a very simple way to manage it. When we first released Office 365, the only way to change this was with PowerShell. And you can imagine that our small business customers thought that was a little bit too difficult. So that was when we heard loud and clear. We needed to make ability to not force you to change your password. And we set it really low. We set the default, I think, at like 90 days. So after the first 90 days, we had a lot of small business customers calling us, being like, don't ever make me do this again. So that was one we wanted to fix. So if we go back to the admin here, that was the service settings. We have users and groups. So this is just where you would think, as you'd think, you manage your users, groups, the shared mailboxes that I showed earlier. Very simple. You can also do contacts. So this is if you want to have external contacts that are, you know, official, that show up in the GAL. This is where you can add those or show up in the address book, basically, when people search for users. You have your ability to manage licenses and purchase more licenses, manage your domains. So this is where you can add additional domains and manage the DNS. A lot of work has been going into making this easier, and we have some. There's additional trouble. If you see these little arrow in this pop-up, there's additional troubleshooting tools that can help you diagnose domain problems. We go back to the service settings. Service status, this shows basically the service health dashboard. And this helps show you basically what's going on with the service, if they think there's any kind of issue or problem with it. And you get the key down at the bottom showing you what's going on, so you can find that out. I think, for example, this one, I actually know what this is about right here. This is saying they found a bit of a bug with the new password sync thing that I mentioned earlier for DirSync. But it's just related to if you do a hybrid exchange, you have to disable a certain feature. So that gives you an example of how we give a lot of detail into anything that is going on with the service and try and keep people informed with the service health and performance. And then lastly, you have the support tab. And this is where you can actually call. You can actually get the number to call the technical and billing and subscription. And then also you can create service requests. So if you have other service changes that you want, but you don't need an immediate answer from someone, you can just log a service request here, and we have engineers that will get back to you within 24 hours and work with you to resolve the issue. And then also we're also adding more and more automated tools to help diagnose problems. So like one of the most common things is people see that Outlook isn't connecting, but you never know. Is it my end? Is it a problem on my side? Is it Microsoft's problem? Is it my ISP's problem? And so this is where you can really use the email connection diagnostic tool to test out and figure out where the problem is yourself before you call in. So that's just kind of a quick overview of the admin portal for the small business SKU. So pretty much in summary, showed you all just kind of the high-level overview of everything it's capable of, some scenarios that's really useful in solving for small businesses. Talked a little bit about Office 365 Pro Plus, which is one of the main value props of being able to, for essentially $15 a month or $12.50 a month if you buy it annually. Get Office on five different devices for that user. There's just really no other way to get that kind of value for small businesses today. Plus, they get all the online services with that as well. So, any other final questions?
Yeah, one more. I have an E3 account, and the user downloads are only 3 on that as opposed to 5 on the small business account. Is that going to change?
It's 5. It should be 5. I would be happy to, if you want to come afterwards, I can look at it with you and see if we can figure it out. It should be 5. So, yeah. Yes, question. The forums are part of the community, so it's not inside of it, but it's the community help, and we have support agents that monitor that daily to make sure that we're keeping, very high answer rate to our community forums. So community.office365.com. Oh, forums. So the, InfoPath forums? InfoPath forums are, no, those are not supported inside of the small business. Those are an advanced feature you have to have the enterprise SKU for. The only thing that's sort of like that is that we now have the new Excel surveys, if you haven't used those. Excel surveys are pretty interesting. They're kind of, they kind of let you create a little, a form that people can, basically a form that fills out into an Excel table, right? And you can send, the nice thing about that is you can send that externally and collect anonymous one responses too. So it's very useful to, so definitely check out Excel surveys. Any other questions? All right, thank you very much. Have a great rest, last day tomorrow and an attendee party. Thanks.